Oh, there's no better way to come into hour two of the drive here on TSN 1200. Lieber Sage, Mac, Connors Vita, Cam Clement. This was, fun fact, always the intro to hour two of TSN Weekend. And another fun fact that you probably don't need. We are 8 days away from CM Punk coming back into AEW. Oh, get excited. Just like I'm excited about what we need to know here on a Friday afternoon.
Well, Lee, you need to know it's a game night here on TSN 1200. Game four of the NBA Finals. Live from South Beach as the Denver Nuggets take a 2-1 series lead into tonight's game. All our coverage starts at 7:30 with the pregame show. It's an 8:30 tip-off as the NBA Finals continue. Meanwhile, the Canadian Open, round two, well underway across the TSN television network. Carl Yuan, your leader right now. He's in the clubhouse at 9 under par, good for a one-stroke lead over Aaron Rye, who's just made the turn. He's 3 under on the day through 10, 8 under for the tournament, just one back of the leader. Of note, Adam Hadwin in the clubhouse after shooting a 4 under 68 today. He's 5 under and tied for 10th. Corey Connors, who had a share of the first round lead, is through 6 right now, even on the day, still 5 under for the tourney, also tied for 10th. And want to give a shout out to Will Bateman, who had the round of the day today, a 6 under 66. He's T15 at 4 under par.
Not bad if you can get it.
Not bad at all. Half of the men's final is set at the French Open after Novak Djokovic beats Carlos Alcaraz in what was an entertaining match in 4 sets earlier today. I was watching a little bit of that, Lee, and man, yeah. Alcaraz makes shots, gets to balls that you would think, no chance. And he's the world number one, up and coming, and just couldn't get it done against the wily veteran Novak Djokovic, who's the third seed. The other men's semifinal is underway right now, and Casper Ruud is up 3-love in the third set. He's already taken the first 2 sets on Alexander Zverev, so it's looking, if the results hold, Casper Ruud will be in the final against Novak Djokovic. Also want to let you know, Leyla Annie Fernandez in women's doubles won her semifinal match today to advance to the women's doubles final. She's partnered with American Taylor Townsend. Of course, coverage of the French Open also all across the TSN television network. Week one in the CFL continues tonight. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers hosting the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You can watch that on TSN tonight. That one kicks off at 8:30. The Ottawa Redblacks, of course. Montreal, they'll kick off their season against the Montreal Alouettes tomorrow night at 7. And Lever Sage himself will have countdown to kickoff starting at, by my math, 5:30.
That's correct.
Oh, AJ Jakubek, Jeff Avery will have the call.
Yep.
Right here on your home for each and every single Ottawa Redblacks game, usually, TSN 1200. And some new news on the Sens sale front. Bruce Garriock reporting that Steve Apostolopoulos has pulled out of the bidding process, according to Bruce's reporting. Just got fed up with how long the process is taking, leaving it ostensibly down to the two favorites in Michael Andlauer and the Kimmel Group, although the Nico Sparks Group also reportedly still in the mix. And that, Lever Sage, on a Friday afternoon is what you need to know.
That's pretty good coverage there, Matt. I would just include the fact that the Columbus Blue Jackets and the New Jersey Devils.
Damon Severson. Sign and trade.
Damon Severson was scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent. He could not come to a deal with the Devils. So, yeah, we don't see many sign and trades in the National Hockey League. But it's a third-round pick, which goes back to the Devils. so Columbus can get him and sign him, because they have an 8-year, $50 million contract for Damon Severson. And so that's $6.25 million per year for Severson. And look, he was really good this year for the Devils. I wouldn't call him like a, you're going to go win the Stanley Cup because you got Damon Severson, but he's the type of guy that you plug into the lineup and suddenly your defense is much better. The Blue Jackets have got Provorov and Damon Severson now in the last week, which their defense is completely upgraded for Mike Babcock. And the sign and trade thing usually would only work in a place because Severson could get the extra year, or the Jackets could get the extra year at 8 years, and Severson could get that now, or else he would only have gotten 7, right? If he wanted to go anywhere else in unrestricted free agency. So he got his extra year, and the Devils got a third round pick back. And that's what you need to know. There's just so much
going on. Thank you, Lee.
So much going on. Oh, love the Popeyes. Not Popeyes.
I love Popeyes, too.
Either supplements.
Get some veggie greens.
Yeah, or chicken.
Oh.
Right.
Some tenders, yeah. Spicy.
So.
The chicken sandwich. Ooh.
The Popeye, which is suddenly someone just appears. They open the door in the studio. They walk in like they're something. And in and around this time, it's usually Matt Scooby who comes in. Chest out some great pickleball story about him being in Faces magazine. We said, no, not today.
We need an upgrade.
Yeah.
Don't you sit there be pretending that you didn't ask me to come up here. Like, I'm just walking up, demanding my time on your station. I would never do that.
Jeremy Chiron from CTV Ottawa.
And Lever Sage.
I might have suggested.
Matt Conisfida.
I might have suggested that you pop by at some point, because you're always entertaining. You're always,
got
a lot to say.
That's true.
Right? So it's a good
radio. I
usually
don't know what I'm talking about, but
it's a usually, yeah. Well, I do 4 hours every day, Jer. Yeah. Like, thanks.
We're all in the same boat.
But it's great to have you here.
What's going on? Speaking of pickleball, we want to talk pickleball a little bit?
Jer, it's your segment.
You've walked in here, chest open. You and I have played pickleball before.
What's
your take on my pickleball game? Where would you put me on a scale of 1 to 10?
Do you know, I'm going to be real honest with you here.
Let's hear it. Give it to me.
And I appreciate the fact that, and I hope you do, that I'm going to be real honest with you.
Yeah. So I would expect nothing less from you, Lee.
You're a very good pickleball player. And I think anyone that would go up against you one-on-one would understand that most likely they're going to get beat. Like, there's an upper echelon of the people here at Bell Media, and I think Scooby's one.
Yep.
And then there's kind of the next level of, Michael Woods, Jeremy Chiron, maybe John Ruddle.
Okay.
And
I like that.
And there's that upper echelon.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Now, however.
Uh-oh. There's always a however. I wonder if your however is the same as my however.
Well, yeah. It's, look. Some of this business it's about people, right?
Yeah.
And you have to get to know people and what makes people better, and sometimes what can get to people. And so I would say that you are one of the better players that wears their emotions on their sleeve. And if you start to get frustrated with things that go on the pickleball court, if I'm playing you, I'm going to exacerbate those. I'm going to make sure.
You're going to get under my skin.
I'm going to make sure that those are highlighted. And I'm probably, at the end of the day in a doubles match, going to beat you because of those things. Not because of the ability.
Yeah.
But because of those things. I'm worried that you're going to rein it in, those emotions, and become the best player in the league.
This is high praise. I appreciate this, Lee. And you know what?
It's actually a diss, which I made sound really good.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll be the first to admit, I am uber competitive at most things,
yes.
And I have a hard time dialing it back.
Right.
I
love that about you.
I just can't. It's hard. It's hard for me to take the foot off the gas pedal and let up. So I'm the first to admit, I often get in my own head, and I often try and do too much. It's true.
And
I do it on the golf course.
That's
playing pickleball. I put a lot of pressure. It's just how I am. It's
I think
the way I'm wired.
You have
maybe behind Scooby, the highest ceiling of anyone I've seen play in our pickleball league.
Isn't this great coming from people who aren't as good as you to tell you that how good you are?
I'll take it. Your ceiling is crazy high, but as unfortunately for you, I've talked about on this show and talked about with you, we golfed a couple of summers ago now.
Every time he's got to bring this up.
He keeps bringing to the forefront.
But here. I've seen it. And I haven't seen a whole bunch of your matches on the pickleball court, but
yeah.
I've heard and I've seen a little bit of it where, again, you get in your own head and you know the moment's there to be taken.
Yep.
And you seize up a little bit.
I'm
and
like
you start
the opposite
to make the
of,
unforced
of,
errors.
I'm like the opposite of Matthew Tkachuk.
Right.
You're like, Captain Anti-Clutch.
I'm Captain Anti-Clutch. I've made it to two pickleball league finals.
You don't drive a standard.
I have not won one.
In your life.
I have. My last car was a standard. I just got a new car. It's not a standard.
Right. Because there's no clutch. Right?
Yeah, yeah. There okay. What I'm getting at here
you finally got it.
Is taking on, knowing what you know about me as a pickleball player.
Yeah.
How do you think I will fare against someone who has great experience on the tennis court.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about golf a little bit. He's quite a good golfer.
Yep.
He's very good at another sport.
Okay. Who are you talking about?
On the
ice. Callum Fraser?
He's a very good hockey player. Like, he played in the NHL.
Oh.
You might know him.
Daniel.
He's also very good at this other sport called padel.
Daniel Alfredson.
So I'm playing pickleball this weekend against Daniel Alfredson. Graham Richardson and I are playing in a fundraising tournament for the Hart Institute, and we're going to play Daniel. So I'm trying to get myself where I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to be that guy who's like losing it in front of Daniel because he's just like,
you understand
putting it down
that,
my
no, no,
throat.
First of all, this position that people, that somebody bid on, and I'm being somewhat serious, like
yeah.
someone bid on the chance to play with Alfie
someone's,
because
yeah,
of it?
Graham and I are going to play Daniel and someone else who will have won the opportunity to play with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Which already they're winning a chance to beat you, yeah. not to play with Daniel Alfredson,
yeah.
like a big deal, but they're actually winning a chance to beat you and Graham.
Embarrass Jeremy.
No, because beating you guys and watching you guys throw a temper tantrum is actually going to be the most fun for anybody that wins that spot. But what a great chance people
it'll be fun.
Have a chance to go yeah. out. And I don't know how you got
if
put
you'd
into
like
this,
to see a former athlete and still good. On the court.
I would say great.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you want to see him at his best, taking on two guys who really are nobodies and are going to get just
where is it? When
destroyed,
is it?
It's at the EY Center. On Saturday, I think the match is at 3:30.
It's at the EY Center?
The EY Center. There's a big tournament happening.
Incredible.
Lots of people. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hart Center
Institute.
Court?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're setting
the
this up. They're setting
you.
This up to just, you know, end the tournament off. It runs from 12 to 4, and I think the point is really just to end on a high note and yeah. watch Graham and I just cry. Like, just
well, no. Like, you're going to come out
way.
Of this in a win-win, because if you lose, you're like, I'm never going to – somebody won a chance not only to play with Alfie, but to
yeah.
be in that moment playing with Daniel Alfredson, center court. Like, you're not –
And then they also crush my dreams.
Yeah, you don't want to take that moment away from them. So you'll lose the game and then say that you lost on purpose because you didn't want to ruin the moment.
I can't be that guy. I'm not. Yeah, exactly. How hard am I going to try here? I can't.
But knowing you.
I can't embarrass them.
And Graham's kind of like that, too. Like, Graham's got that competitive
edge. Yeah, he's competitive. He's competitive. He's a great pickleball player. He's competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I beat him, but yeah. you're a golfer.
Yes.
Have you watched any of this Canadian Open so far?
I've been trying. I've been trying to watch as much as I can.
The rough at Oakdale? Oh,
yeah.
My. It's insane.
Yeah. Looks like it, eh?
I've played a course or two where you're in the deep rough, and like early on, I'm trying to hit it down the fairway, and
yeah.
I realize after my second swing, just punch it into the fairway.
Yeah.
And like, that's me. I'm not good at golf. I'm not.
Oh, I know. I've played with you.
Well, I drain my putt on it. but like to see the pros have to play that way, like you can only imagine how brutal that rough is.
Yeah.
So what has life been like for you the last week or two? Because I know you've been on some difficult stories, certainly with the fires and the smoke
yeah.
and everything. And, you know.
Yeah, you know what? It's just been busy and it's.
And I'm going to give you credit here
yeah.
before, because people sometimes think, you know, being on TV and being able the one to tell the stories and man, it's hard. Like it is hard work to be able to go out there and make sure that you're getting all sides, you're getting the information, you're making it concise, you're talking to the right people. And it's, I'm telling you, like when that red light comes on, people think, oh, they're starting their job. They're only on for a couple of minutes. Yeah, it's like, no, folks, I always describe it like this. Tell me if I'm wrong. Because I did TV a little bit before, and I was always like, no, it's kind of like a 9-to-5 job that you work your butt 100%. Off till 4:58, and at 4:58 they turn the red light on and say, hey, be at your best.
Yeah, then exactly.
Go tell the story of everything you've done today.
Now, don't get me wrong. It is a privilege to do what we do, and I will never take it for granted, but you're correct. It's not as easy as some may think sometimes, and the most challenging part is sometimes after a difficult day of chasing interviews and talking to people and running around the city. And depending on what the story is you're covering, maybe you're talking with stations across the country because our network obviously is stations all over the country. And then come 5 o'clock at the end of your day, you've got to be at your best.
Exactly.
So it's challenging. It's tough. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
With the fires and stuff, it's been, and the smoke, it's not been easy.
No, it's not been easy. It's not been easy. It's been really difficult. Yeah. So I worked a late shift on Tuesday. I was anchoring the late show on Tuesday, and then in early in the morning on Wednesday to cover some of this fire stuff. Yeah. We were speaking with Your Morning and some of the stations across the network. People were having a hard time. People were having a really difficult time. It was very smoky out there. Anyone who has asthma, anyone who's younger, young kids. I have a 7-month-old daughter at home. We've been working hard to keep her inside as much as possible, not let her outside. Mm-hmm. Officials were saying, you know, don't spend too much time outside. Don't exert yourself outdoors. If you're spending time outside for extended periods, consider wearing an N95 mask. So a lot of relief today and yesterday in the city, people that are finally going, okay, I mean, pardon the pun, but you can go out and breathe in the fresh air and breathe a sigh of relief now that this has passed. And it's good. And hopefully it stays this way. But the other thing is officials are saying we could be in for a smoky summer. These wildfires have not stopped burning. The fires that brought the smoke here are in Quebec and parts of northern Ontario. It's the wind patterns that bring the smoke here. Those fires are still burning. So the opportunity of that smoke returning is still there. We could see more of it this summer, which is kind of the unfortunate thing. But for now, at least we can get back out and enjoy some more pickleball games in the fresh air.
What are you on the beat?
Today. LRT today. So LRT closures or service interruptions. They're doing some maintenance over the next 2 weeks. There are rolling closures along the line. You can look at our website for when and where. The difficult thing is, depending on the day, depending on the time, different parts of the line are closed. Today, it's between Line and Herdman stations. I believe I'm going off memory right now, but I believe that's what it is. Basically, the smack dab in the middle of the line, there is no service. So if you're going from one end to the other, you will have to get on a train, get off that train, get on a bus, get off that bus, back on a train to get to where you're going.
Can I ask you like a legitimate question? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to be facetious when I say this.
Yep.
They're not going to get the benefit of the doubt from anybody. It's just the way that this has all gone. People, it's like the send sale, right? Like we talk about it. Nobody really knows. And people are sick of talking about it. Well, the LRT people are not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. How do they get back from it? Like, what can they do to try to ease some of the commuters' minds? Can they? Like, I just find every time we talk about this, I bet they have real maintenance and real issues. But with everything that's happened and the buildup,
a lot of questions.
They're not going to get the benefit of the doubt from people.
It's a short leash. Like to your point, people's patience is wears thin.
Yeah.
They're not willing to just go along with it like they were earlier on. So many things have happened with this public transit system. People are frustrated. And so certainly there are OC Transpo says this is routine maintenance. These are things that just have to be done on a system like this. Mm-hmm. One of the things they're doing is grinding the tracks. I'm told that's normal. On a system like this, after wear and tear, you have to grind the tracks down, and that's how you avoid some of that shaking, some of the noise you hear. That's normal. Some of the other things they're doing is working on these water issues that have happened east of Rideau. They're plugging holes. They're trying to avoid some water drainage issues in the tunnels. Is that routine maintenance? That's the question a lot of people are asking, whether or not that is actually routine maintenance, or if this is maintenance that has now become routine because of issues that have happened in the past. The other thing they're working on is the overhead catenary system. They're doing maintenance there. They're inspecting there. That's the system that has caused all the issues in that part of the line between Lees and Herdman Station, where there's that bend and turn, and it seems to be where all the issues are. So again, people are asking the question, are those things that normally you would have to do routine maintenance on, or is this happening because on our system it has proven to be a problem? So there is some skepticism, to your point, Lee. People aren't just willing to buy this and say, yeah, no problem. We'll ride a bus intermittently for 2 weeks while you do routine maintenance. People are asking questions because people are frustrated.
Okay. You got to go.
I got to go.
Yeah.
I got to do an interview.
Excellent.
This has been a pleasure.
Thanks for the Popeye.
Thanks, gentlemen.
I wish we could have ended on a better...
I wish we could have had Popeyes for my Popeye. But you guys don't like me.
Supplements
or
chicken?
Sponsor.
Chicken.
Yeah, if we could get a...
I haven't had Popeye's chicken in like...
Yeah, but the
I don't even know what
guys,
I order. I have
you guys
no
are
idea.
Thinking short term here.
Yeah.
The supplements
might be better.
The supplements are better for us long term.
That's true. It's
in
true.
Fact,
give
I have
me some
a,
greens.
I have a bunch of them
you got
today.
Some greens? Come on.
Yeah.
I'll take some greens.
I'm not worried about like down the line. I want it right now. Yeah. Give me some chicken.
Give me some grease.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, always invited on The Drive.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, gentlemen.
Jeremy Chiron, CTV Ottawa. All right, back with more of The Drive on TSN 1200. Welcome back to The Drive. Lee Versage, Matt Conisvita in today as the co-host, Cam Clement, producing. Kind of stinking up the...
What am I stinking up? Nah, I got cucumber.
Nah. I know, I'm not a big cucumber fan. In fact, I can
goodness.
Smell it from a mile away.
Well, you're stinking up the studio with your peanut butter, which up until like within the past 6 weeks... Would have been like, are you trying to kill me? But it turns out I've outgrown my peanut allergy. So no worries anymore about yours.
I wasn't worried.
I know. You wouldn't worry.
No, I would. But you're not allergic to peanut butter anymore.
Oh, life-changing.
Just fantastic.
Incredible stuff.
I've developed a very concerning peanut butter addiction. I've gone through 3 jars in the last 10 days. I'll just open up a jar and take a spoon to it. And then I'll eat an entire jar in a night.
Okay. I don't want to be that guy. Here, but I'll just...
No, it doesn't feel good. I can feel it in my stomach. It's like heavy. It's a heaviness. Is
no,
developing.
And it's not the peanut butter part of it, but I'm going to guess that this is like a Kraft or Jif or one of those.
Yeah, yeah. Crunchy.
Just look at the sugar
content.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll realize that
I'm well aware.
You might want to...
100 calories in one tablespoon.
You might want to go to the all-natural peanut butter.
Yep. High protein, though.
It'll make a big difference, though, the all-natural, if you're going to do that. Because I understand that. Like, people love peanut butter, and I still, one of the best things you can do if you have a sweet craving is just take a piece of chocolate, like a Dairy Milk or just something regular, and dip it right in the old peanut butter jar, and man, oh, man, as good as you're going to get.
I still haven't done much of the actual peanut butter. I've tried most now of the peanut and peanut butter chocolate bars. I've tried a little bit, thanks to you, Lee, of a peanut butter and honey sandwich. And Chelsea at home has a jar of peanut butter now, and she'll do like apples with peanut butter. And one of these days, I'm going to do a PB&J, probably on toast.
You haven't loved it, though.
I haven't loved it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much of it is just, I've gone my whole life being like, this is something that I can never, ever eat.
Yeah.
And so I've just got this built-in aversion. I don't know if I'm going to come around, but so far, like, I'm not loving it. I'm not loving it. I am loving the freedom, though, of, like, we went out to a restaurant on Wednesday. Half the menu items have, like, whether it's, like, cashew pesto or, you know, you've got peanuts involved as, like, a garnish. And not having to worry about that at all has been incredible. Just absolute, like, I go to a restaurant now. I'm going to be a much better wedding guest because I always, like, any time I've gone to a wedding, I've got to have the dietary
Matt,
restrictions.
Let me break this down for you real quick. You're still going to be a pain in the you know what, okay? Regardless of your dietary restrictions or not, you're going to go to a wedding and you're still going to be a pain in the butt.
Less of a pain.
Speaking about being a pain in the butt, the front nine at Oakdale. I actually
what a stat.
So we have the golf on the RBC Canadian Open, and I paused it because I didn't want to lose this stat, which I find wild. And people, if this happens all the time, maybe you can correct me, but I feel like this is a really, really big gap. So give us the numbers, Matt, between the front nine and the back nine at Oakdale at the Canadian Open.
Well, at this stage, which is probably a little bit over midway through round two.
Okay. So we've got about a round and a half, give or take.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more than that, a round and three quarters.
Okay.
I think most of the players are close to making the turn, but not a full two rounds in the books. And right now, competition at the RBC Canadian Open on the front nine are 325 strokes over par.
325?
Yes. They are plus 325 on the front nine. On the back nine, 249 strokes under par.
Wow. So you're looking at a gap of almost 600 strokes. Difference between the front nine and the back nine in a round and three quarters.
It is bonkers how much tougher the front nine is playing than the back nine.
Yeah, like that's like two different courses.
It's staggering.
So I think when you look at Corey Connors going out today.
He's now one under
playing
the ninth.
So, yeah, he's one under on the day playing hole number nine, six under for the tournament, three back. I feel like if you get through the front in even par or even better, like right now he's one under through eight, you better be feeling really good about yourself, because if I'm the caddy of anybody that's even par or better through the front, I'm showing them that stat going, you have just done what not a lot of people have done. So
well,
that would fuel, right? A little excitement.
For sure. And to that point, when we were doing need to know basis at the top of the hour, Aaron Rye was in second place, one stroke back of the leader. And Aaron Rye, 12 holes into his round, but he started on the back. And he's given one back already. And he's now 7 under. He's now tied for second, 2 off the lead. But now he's playing his second nine of the day, but playing the front nine, which obviously is playing much, much tougher. And so it's going to be interesting. There's no guarantee that the guy who was one off the lead, now playing his second nine, and it looks like starting on the back might be a big disadvantage.
Will Bateman, you mentioned earlier, round of the day, 6 under 66 in the clubhouse, was 1 under through 9. 5 under on the back. Right? Like, this is night and day, and I think provides... I'm actually more excited about watching on Sunday now, regardless of the Canadians, because I said earlier it wouldn't do me a lot of good depending on what's going on if there weren't big names there and they weren't Canadian. But the fact that in the final round, you can get to a point where you're just managing that front nine because you know you can make up two or three strokes on the back.
Well, and it's going to be really fascinating too, because there's going to be one or two people who are out early and make it through the front nine without taking too much damage and then start to make the push on the back nine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have your leaders playing the front and you'll be hearing the roars from around the property. You'll be seeing the numbers on the scoreboard and these guys making a move. And it's going to be tough when you're playing the front nine on Sunday to make a move on the front nine, right? So you're going to see these guys, and I'm sure you're going to see like opportunities that, okay, well, I'm probably going to be able to score. But, and the fact that they'll have played three rounds on the course and they'll be able to strategize. But it'll be really interesting to track the guys who make it through the front nine on Sunday early without doing too much damage and then start to make a move.
You're right. They're going to have to stay real patient. Real patient.
Mm-hmm.
knowing that they hear the roars. They might start out with the lead, and all of a sudden they get on the course, and they're not in the lead anymore because people are finished their rounds, and they've had these good rounds, and it's like, just stay calm, and we'll get there.
I'll get my chances, but I got to make it through the first nine.
That's wild.
Oh.
Just a wild, wild
difference. Staggering
number. Between the two.
So, plus 325 on the front, minus 249 on the back. Wild.
That's nuts. All right, let's take a break. Cam Clement with another look at your traffic and weather. We've got a big read here coming up, Cam.
Always. Well, I'm not going to say, oh, no, it's not a very important ad read. And then...
No, or are you going to overemphasize something on this read?
I'll be exuberant.
Okay, good. We'll be exuberant to tell you when we come back. 50 years ago today, one of the greatest sports achievements ever. We'll let you ponder that, and we'll tell you about it when we come back here on The Drive on TSN 1200. Welcome back to The Drive, Lieber Sage, Matt Conisvita. Today, Cam Clement.
Lee's not letting this one breathe.
In fact, I was going to say Cam had started out really well with the music. And
You're crushing it, Cammer. Outstanding.
Taking a tumble?
No, outstanding.
He can't be perfect, though.
I'd say he's perfect.
Yeah.
His music selection so far, 10s out of 10.
I'm just letting it breathe because Matt and Cam, in different ways, are both dancing along to the song.
Just getting you in the right headspace for Friday night, Lee.
Yeah. That's not going to get me in the right headspace. However, Cam, not perfect. Not a lot of sporting events go completely perfect. However, 50 years ago today, this happened.
Sham on the outside. Sham getting ahead in front as they move around the turn with Secretary at second. Then there's a large gap. Make it eight lengths back to Mike Allen in third and Vice the Prince fourth. And Private Smiles is still the trailer. They're on the backstretch. It's almost a match race now. Secretariat's on the inside by a head. Sham is on the outside. They've opened 10 lengths on Mike Allen, who is third by a head, with Vice the Prince fourth. Then it's another eight lengths back to Private Smiles, who is trailing the field. They continue down the backstretch, and that Secretariat now taking the lead. He's got it by about a length and a half. Still Sham, 10 lengths back, Mike Allen, Vice the Prince. They're moving on the turn now. For the turn at Secretariat. It looks like he's opening. The lead is increasing. Maybe a three and a half. He's moving into the turn. Secretariat holding on to a large lead. Sham is second, and then it's a long way back to Mike Allen and Vice the Prince. They're on the turn, and Secretariat is blazing along. The first three quarters of a mile and 109 and four fifths. Secretariat is frightening now. He is moving like a tremendous machine. Secretariat by 12. Secretariat by 14 lengths on the turn. Sham is dropping back. It looks like they'll catch him today. As Mike Allen and Vice the Prince are both coming up to him now. But Secretariat is all alone. He's out there almost a sixth half of a mile away from the rest of the horses. Secretariat is in a position that's impossible to catch. He's into the stretch. Secretariat leads his field by 18 lengths. And now Vice the Prince is going to second.
So 50 years ago today for the Triple Crown at Belmont.
It was a pretty close race.
Secretariat wins by 31 lengths.
And maybe the most impressive thing to me is how the broadcaster is able to, you know, distinguish the lengths while he's calling the race. Because, like, I'm watching the race and I'm watching this video. I saw it this morning, and I'm like, yeah, that looks like two lengths. Okay, that looks like it could be four lengths.
Right.
How on earth does he know 18? But I completely believe him. Like, it was impressive. But, man, you'd think there's so much drama going into the race. He has the opportunity. Secretariat can win the Triple Crown. And not only does Secretariat win the Triple Crown, that was one of the most dominant performances, one of the most dominant victories you'll ever see in your life. Like, I'm trying to think of a comparison. And I can't, like, I think Tiger Woods at Pebble Beach, where he went bogey-free for his entire four-round U.S. Open, right? And I can't remember how many he won by, but it was like everyone's hovering around even par, and Tiger's like minus 27 or something, whatever it was. And, like, it's a win like that. The domination was just absolutely unbelievable. And for that to happen in the third leg of the Triple Crown, like, that's... that's once in a multiple lifetime stuff right there.
There's a story that Jack Nicklaus watched the finish at home, pounding the ground and weeping while he watched it. And he later wondered kind of why. And somebody told him, all your life in your game, you've strived for perfection. At Belmont, you saw it. In the most dominating of, still the course record, 1973, 50 years ago.
I was maybe exaggerating a little bit with my Tiger Woods comparison, obviously, but I pulled it up. I believe it was Tiger finished minus 12, and the runners-up, Miguel Angel Jimenez and Ernie Els, plus 3. Tiger, the only person to finish the tournament under par, and he won by 15 at 12 under par. Just staggering stuff. But again, like, that's as close to perfection as you can get in a major tournament. If I'm remembering correctly that Tiger did not have a single bogey that entire tournament, like, in golf, that is perfection. And as you said, Jack Nicklaus watching Secretariat, that was perfection.
Incredible. 50 years ago today. Our TSN1200.ca web poll of the day brought to you by the Tool and Equipment Store. About the Ottawa Red Blacks. I'm eager to get both of your opinions on this. What needs to happen for you to consider this Red Blacks season a success? Your three options. Is it over 500 at home? Is it make the playoffs? Or is it win the Grey Cup? Only three options. TSN1200.ca. Matthew.
This is an easy one for me of the three options that I'm being given.
Yep.
And for me, would you like to be over 500 at home? Absolutely. Do you need to win a home game? Without a doubt, you need to win a home game. But in order for the season to be a success, you have to make the playoffs. I think if you make the playoffs and you're a game or two below 500 at home, still a success. Now, if you make the playoffs without winning a home game, then maybe you can argue. But I think if you make the playoffs this season and you're the Ottawa Redblacks, that's a success. That was my vote. You got to make the playoffs.
I don't love the options again. But you know what, Matt? I don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and come in and do the morning show. TSN Mornings.
Well, you will.
For a week. And then you can
first
criticize.
First week of August?
You can criticize the questions that Connors Vita came up with.
Only 4 days that week, though.
Because
it's a holiday Monday.
You're doing the show.
Yeah, I'll be hitting my stride.
Right. So you'll make up the questions, and then I'll criticize them on the morning show instead of coming on the drive and criticizing them.
If that's how you want to do it. If you don't want to be a team on the morning show, if you want to blame Matt, then sure.
I'll be on Simmer's team.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Lee.
I don't love the options because I think there are some other things here in play. If you want to get pedantic about things.
Oh, I love getting pedantic.
You could go in the CFL you could go 2-7 at home and make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the year the Red Blacks won the Grey Cup, they went 2-6-1 at home. So,
was it a successful season?
Yes. But that doesn't, that's not what the question reads. The question reads, what needs to happen for you to consider the Red Blacks having a successful season? So if they go 2-7 at home and they make the playoffs and they lose on the road in the Eastern semifinal,
mm-hmm.
no, not good enough for me.
So
not good enough.
What if they finish 2-7 at home, make the playoffs, win a playoff game, then lose in the East final?
No.
Not a success?
No.
What if they make the Grey Cup, lose the Grey Cup,
okay.
and went 2-7 at home?
Sure.
Okay. So if there was an option... yeah, it's really difficult.
The season will be
your
a success.
Parameters.
The season will be a success if this team plays well at home and makes the playoffs. Okay? So you can play well at home and not win as many games because you've played really well. Some things have gone against you in 9 games. You're 4-5 at home, which eliminates the under 500. You can go in, play a really entertaining playoff game and lose. But two things have to happen for this team for it to be a success, in my mind. Is number one, play some entertaining football and win some games at home.
Okay, I'm going to give you an either or.
Number
and I
two, it's make the playoffs.
And I want to hear Cam's answer in a second here. But I want to give you an either or. 2-7 at home, but win the East semi, lose in the East final. Or 4-5 at home, but lose in the East semi. Which season is more successful?
Cam?
I think going 2-7 at home and then getting to the East final would be a successful season. I think overall it's about kind of reestablishing yourself in this weaker East division. They have a chance to really separate themselves from the pack moving forward in the East. So I think making the playoffs and then winning a playoff game, that would be enticing. Over, I understand the history of this team and their struggles at home. But, hey, if they were able to go on the road and overcome all that, I would consider the season a success. I don't get too wrapped up in the home thing, because if they go 5-4 at home and go and their record finishes at 7-11, they miss the playoffs, that's a failure. So that automatically, for me, eliminates the first option of over 500 at home.
Couldn't agree more, Cam.
Thank you.
Neither. Neither.
This isn't a
no,
either
is.
Or
it's
neither.
I'm not answering the question then.
Oh,
I'm going to pull an AJ.
Stepping in for AJ.
Yeah, you're right. I'm representing AJ on the show. Neither. Again, it actually matters, which I think sometimes we assume that every fan is a hardcore, it's win or else. And we don't care how you win. They've actually done some damage to people in the city. Okay, so there'll always be some hardcore fans that only care about the winning. And if you win every single game on the road and win one game at home and you finish with 10 wins and you make the playoffs, there are some that are going to be very happy. But I'm telling you right now, there is that next fan who wants to come to the game and wants to be entertained and wants to have a couple of beers with their friends and wants to gather in each end zone, the luxury lodge at one end right now and the west end zone near Bank Street. And they want to say, you know what? I'm into this game in the second half and I want to watch this team go down the field and I want to watch them win a game. I want to be entertained. They've lost some of the fans because at halftime, there's been nothing to watch. So I think they're on track to get back to where people want them to be. I really believe that. But, man, they got some making up to do. And to me, that begins, you make the playoffs, you're going to get some people into it. But I'm telling you, you go 2-7 at home and you make the playoffs and you lose on the road, that is not good enough.
But that fan you just described, Lee, I don't think they'll be happy if the Red Blacks escape an ugly game with a 17-16 win. Like, don't you think it's more about the product as a whole? Like, if you're talking about making that fans night out a success, then maybe you just put all your eggs in the offense's basket and try to make this thing a juggernaut to send people home happy. But if it's about winning football games, home or away, I don't care. I'll take, give me the playoff win.
Cam, you're the producer of the Red Blacks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remind me of the first, like, four or five texts and the first phone call that came in on the preseason game that they lost to Montreal, which has nothing to do with winning and everything to do with the players on the field trying to get every snap possible to try and make the team. You know what it was about? Why didn't they run the ball at the end? Why didn't they run time off the clock? What are they doing? Why did they not win the football game and run the ball at the end and take time off the clock? And you're like, what are you talking about? But that's how people's mindsets are like, how come the third stringer didn't take a knee and run 30 seconds off the clock to win the game?
Well, and along those lines, you talk about the bar for success changing. For some fans, Randy has texted us at 12-1200.
Better be good, Randy.
Standard messaging rates apply.
You know, I'm not in this frivolous mood anymore. Better be good.
If the Red Blacks go for it on 3rd-and-1 with the quarterback not in shotgun, would be a huge success.
I almost brought it up yesterday at the field with Bob Dice. Don't do a 3rd-and-1 with the quarterback in the shotgun. Please, 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 please. Even on a 2nd-and-2, can we not have the running back stand beside the quarterback and then option the ball and give it to the running back up the middle who has no momentum, gets tackled for a loss, and now you're punting? Can we please not do that this year? Okay. Bent over. JP Bolduc, former Red Blacks, now on the Alouettes broadcast. Going to join us at about 4:25. We'll come back, though, talk some Stanley Cup Final. The NBA Finals, game number 4 tonight. Can the Miami Heat get back in the series? We'll talk about it when we come back on The Drive on TSN 1200.